Okay. Could you give me your name?
Yeah, my name's Tony Heslop.
And you were born in where?
Born in Crosby.
In Crosby?
Yeah.
And what date was that?
I was born in January 1957.
And what did your parents do for a living?
My mother was a teacher, and my father worked in local government in the finance department.
Uh-huh. And where did you go to school?
I went to school in St. Mary's College, Crosby. It was run by the Christian Brothers. So I went there both at primary and secondary level, yeah, for a number of years.
Got the full hit.
Got the full hit, I did indeed, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much for that. So if we go on to more pertinent questions. So how long have you supported Everton?
Over 40 years. Yeah. I think the first time I took any interest was when I was about seven. Mm-hmm. And went to a game with my dad about 1964. He took me along, and I remember the smells and the blurred images, but I don't remember much apart from the score.
And what was the score?
They drew 2-2. It was a home match against Leeds United, and in fact he also took me to Blackpool. I think we saw the illuminations as well, but again we were at the back of a fairly rickety stand. And again, it was a draw, I think 1-1 this time, but I was only 6 or 7.
And presumably because it was with your dad, that was why you became an Evertonian?
Very much so, it's in the blood, yes. Yeah.
Any other family members that you used to go with at that time?
No, just myself and my dad. I had two sisters, but they weren't bothered about football. So my dad got me a season ticket in 66, just after the World Cup and just after Everton won the FA Cup. Yeah. So we started going regularly to the Goodison Road stand in 1966.
That was the big old stand.
The big old stand it was, yeah. Yes, and it was for 5 more years before they made the new one. Mm. Yeah.
So how did you and your dad used to go to the match?
We'd either go by public transport or sometimes if she was feeling kind, my mother who drove, my dad didn't, but my mother would drive us and drop us off and pick us up. But that was if she's feeling very kind. Yeah.
You had to call in a few favours for that one.
I think so, yeah.
From that sort of era, what sort of players was your favourite who stood out?
Well, I started supporting them properly when Alex Young was in his prime, but he only had a year or two left at Goodison, so I don't remember him as well as the likes of Alan Ball. I mean, for me, really, it has to be Alan Ball, Howard Kendall, Colin Harvey, that... what's called the Holy Trinity, amazing midfield. And I remember the goal scorers like Joe Royal. Again, they'd stand out in my mind. I always wanted to be Alan Ball. I had red hair, very red hair at the time, so it was natural with my imitation shirt to pretend to be number 8 in the matches we played in the park.
Mm. Alan Ball was my favourite as well, so yeah. Strike a chord there.
Yeah.
How about the unsung heroes of that time? Because I always think the likes of Brian LeBone, although he's a legend at the time, yeah. He wasn't really... He was there.
He was there. he was solid. I think he'd play 42 games a season, so you could rely on him. Yeah. And in fact, we had a reserve centre-half, Roger Kenyon, hardly got a game. Mm. He's a good centre-half, but yeah. Brian LeBone kept him out. I suppose also Sandy Brown, who took his chance when it was... available. Mm. Again, he was fairly solid without being remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Going back to these sort of days, who you'd say is your favourite player now?
In the year 2010, I very much admire Mikel Arteta when he's on form, and a great admirer too of Tim Cahill, both for his skill in creating chances and scoring them. Mm. So. I'd say those two, and I do admire our goalkeeper Tim Howard. Not the goalkeeper's my favourite position, but he's solid.
From then, or indeed from now, have you ever met up with players? Have you got any tales to tell about meeting up with maybe your heroes? Or
yeah, I have met players occasionally at these reunions, and there seem to be an awful lot of former players' dinners. You know, plenty of them in a year. So I met up with the likes of Joe Royal and John Bailey and Gordon West, and they're all very personable. I think Gordon West has got quite a scathing sense of humour, so what I'd remember from him is the fact that he can easily put you down, or you know, he can take the mickey. I think one or two of them were lads when they were playing for the club, and you know, some of the tales they can tell of what they used to do to avoid training, or you know, the number of pints they consume before an important match is it's quite horrifying if you look at what the kind of regime they're meant to follow today. I don't know the new players really, and not to speak to, but yeah, I've met them as well in presentations, that kind of thing.
And you know Dave Hickson, don't you? Yeah,
I know Dave Hickson. Yes, first met him when I did one of the tours of Goodison, and of course Dave is a stalwart of the Everton tours, and he's so good, even to the point of making tea and coffee for people at the end of it. But a lovely man, just so decent and honest, and totally bemused as to why people like him or why people think a lot of him. But you can tell he's dyed in the wool, blue, and you can tell what kind of a determined player he was. I think by his attitude now, you know, he's committed. And although I never saw him play, enough people have told me that he was, he really was the cannonball kid, you know, the rocket of a centre forward.
So that famous picture of him having his eyes sewn up and then coming out to score with a header.
That's right, and didn't think twice about it. Yeah, so certainly heroic and very modest. He and his wife Pat are lovely people to sit and talk to. And they also have an interest in a group I'm interested in, which is there's an Everton in Chile.
Yes, I was going to come on to that. I've got some questions, if that's okay.
By all means, yes. Yeah.
Because could you explain what the... I probably won't pronounce it correctly. The Ruleteros.
Ruleteros, yes.
Ruleteros.
The Ruletero Society is designed to bring together the two clubs, Everton in this country and Everton in Chile. And the reason that it's Everton in Chile is because in 1909, Everton FC from here had a tour of Latin America, and they went to Argentina and Uruguay, not Chile, but people did hear what was going on and they actually travelled to see the games. And as a result of that, a group of young Chileans decided to form a football club, calling it Everton in 1909. So they've just celebrated their centenary. On a personal level, there's been a few visits out to Chile from Evertonians here, so we have actual friends in the club, we have friends among the fans, and we have I think basically we've made known the exploits of Everton FC over there, and we've made known the exploits of Everton in Chile over here.
So it's learning, education process.
Educational as much as anything, yes. Yeah.
So presumably they're labelled CD Everton, is that correct?
CD, yes. Yeah. That stands for Corporación Deportivo, which is a sporting club. And originally they were not just football, but also athletics and basketball. And they were a real community, a community concern.
And can you tell me how they got their nickname? Because that's interesting.
The Ruleteros, it is. They're based in Viña del Mar, which is in Chile, and it is a resort which is famous for its casinos where they play roulette or ruleta. So the Ruleteros are the casino roulette players.
Right.
And that's an apt nickname.
And from your... I know you've been over there and had a marvellous reception.
Very much
and
so.
And such hospitality.
Yeah.
What do you think they think of us?
Well, I think on one level they have a great admiration for the English League, for the Premiership. So they've got great respect for Everton FC and for any club which is in that league. I think they regard us as being a richer club, which is true. And maybe also, I mean, they can see the value of a link with Everton FC. Maybe from the point of view of mutual aid, you know, that we can give them something and they can give us something. Right. So there is respect, but I think now there's also a great deal of interest and a match-to-match following of our progress. And there's any number of Everton shirts, our Everton shirts over there in Chile, because firstly we took a pile of them when we went to visit them, and we've done a lot of swapping as well. So I've got my collection of CD Everton shirts, and one or two people have got my Everton shirts over there.
I believe that the youth team almost all got Rooney on the back of them.
That's right. Yes, it so happened that Everton were getting rid of surplus shirts, and when young Wayne went off to play for United, they were left with a lot of these, so they very kindly donated them to us. And they found their way onto the shirts of youth players, which is good, because they've not got a lot of money, and any help they can get with kit is always welcome.
I think that's a marvellous story of how football unites, because he has so much of divisions, but that's...
Yeah.
Do you ever see a match between us?
The two Evertons? Yeah. It's what we're working towards, and there have been informal talks and kind of sounding out. Yeah, I do. I do see a match. I think it could be a reality. A lot would depend on getting together the right Everton team at the right time, and it being, I suppose, an appropriate build-up to the season from our point of view. But I think more and more people are coming around to the idea that this is not just a fairy tale, not just an ideal Everton, like the stuff of dreams, but something that could have very tangible benefits. Mm-hmm. It could raise the profile of both clubs. Yeah. So I'm optimistic.
I suppose one of the problems is that the close seasons never match up with each other, with one being in the northern, one southern hemisphere.
That's true, yes. Mm-hmm. So in August, when most of our pre-season is, you'd find that they're plumb in the middle of their league season. But the Chilean authorities are quite willing to release them on occasion for special matches, and I think they would regard this as special enough. If a match did take place, I would imagine that the Chileans would come over here, but they'd also double it with a visit to Spain and perhaps play a Spanish club on the way.
Yeah. It'd be lovely to see, wouldn't it?
It would be. I mean, people have said to me, just Everton, it's unique.
Yeah.
And I think that is what attracts people.
It's good to see supporters over here being involved in that as well.
It's educational, and as you said before, that we're speaking the common language of football, and although we speak different languages, English and Spanish, we have an awful lot in common.
Have you any plans in the near future to get across there again?
Not this year, but next year would be good. Very much want to go back there, because we've got such a welcome and such hospitality that always feel welcome at any time.
Yeah, I saw you on the pitch, the photographs on the pitch.
The presentations, yes. Again, that can only be good. Mm-hmm. You know, the swapping of mementos and... the official presentations, it all goes down well.
Going back to this Everton, mm-hmm. for a few minutes, current manager aside, who would you put up there? Who's your favourite manager over the years?
My favourite manager over the years, I suppose what he achieved is Howard Kendall, although I have to say Howard Kendall did much, much, much better the first time he was here, and not quite so well the second and third times he was here. But no, I mean, Howard, when he took us over in 1981, we were very mid-table. We'd not done much for a couple of years, and he gradually built a team that we know what happened to them 84, 85, the trophy-winning years. So Howard is probably my number one manager. Also got kind of a great respect for Harry Kattrick. A disciplinarian, a man who knew what he wanted. But he provided us with two league trophies and an FA Cup, so he's responsible for a great deal of success as well.
Interesting you mentioned those two, because they were both brought up in the Everton team, the Everton tradition.
Yes.
Do you think that has something to do with the with their success?
I think it helps as well. You know, that they understand what Everton's all about, and you're right, playing for them gives them that special feel for the shirt. Mm-hmm. And both managers, I'm sure, many times would have said to their players, it's what you're playing for that matters, not the amount of money you receive or nothing else. What matters is that blue shirt. So from that point of view, and knowing the fans as well and the fans' expectations, it's all very positive. I remember Howard Kendall saying that one of the best match day talks he gave was at an FA Cup match at Stoke, when 10 minutes before the beginning of the match, he opened the dressing room window and said, listen to that, and you heard 7,000 Evertonians bawling their hearts out. He said, those people have travelled to see you play for them. and they did, and they won. And they won the FA Cup that year as well, so that was one of Howard's most memorable team talks.
Do you think that passion for a club per se is still there in the current footballers?
That's a difficult one. Everyone's got their price. So, you know, one thing, sadly, I don't think you'll see in the future is today's players being quite so sociable as yesterday's players when it comes to retirement dinners and that kind of thing. I think perhaps they'll feel a little bit more distant. So maybe the finances have made it a little bit less passionate from the players' point of view. But I still believe the players when they say that they'd sweat blood to play for the team. And it does seem that Everton have got, you know, a number of players whose loyalty is beyond question when it comes to going out there. So at least for as long as they're with us, the passion's not to be questioned.
I think all Evertonians like to think that the players think of Everton as a special club, more so than players of other teams feel for their clubs. Do you have that feeling?
I do, yes. I'd quote the example of Andy King, you know, who played for a number of clubs, but he's one who'd say, well, it was the Everton years which are special. And he'll even come back to the club now. He'll come to dinners. He'll come to watch games. And maybe because of the former Players Association and the fact it does keep links with players over a number of decades, you get a lot coming back who say, well, Everton was a quarter, a third, a half of my career, but this is the team that I still look out for.
Yeah.
And I do believe that Everton was something special for them, and they do have that special place in the hearts of Everton.
Because do you put that down to the club or the... Because the club in the past haven't been known to look after their ex-players as well as they could have done.
You're right.
Do you think it's the supporters or the city?
I'd say number one, the supporters. You know, it's what's in their hearts. Yeah. It's what they remember. And in this city, the fans do have good memories and long memories. Yeah. Interestingly, you know, one player who's received a really good welcome in recent years when he's come back is Tony Kay. Which I'm pleased about, because obviously he had to leave the game because of the scandal of the match fixing, etc. But Evertonians remember that in the year that he was with them, he played an important part, and they don't forget that. So he gets a hero's welcome when he comes back, and I'm glad that he's been welcomed officially into the bosom of the club as well.
You talk about memories, the real nitty gritty. You've got one match to talk about. Which one is it?
Oh, well, it's what most would say probably. It's the game against Bayern Munich, the semi-final second leg at Goodison in 1985. We'd drawn 0-0 in the first leg, needed to win in the second leg, and we're 1-0 down at half time. And it was Andy Gray who said the crowd in the second half made the difference. They sucked the ball into the Gallagher Street net. We scored three. We won 3-1 in the end. But I do remember, once we'd scored our first goal, there never seemed to be any doubt as who'd win that match. So for atmosphere, for sheer tension and passion, it's the Bayern Munich match. Yeah,
I think there's a lot of people would agree with you.
Yeah.
And thinking back on that sort of matches and the early days that you started coming to, how has the match changed, in your opinion? Thinking about things like ticket prices and the programmes, what you had to eat at half time.
Well, prices are beyond recognition. When I started, it was 4 shillings 20 pence to stand in the Gladys Street, and now the minimum is about £20 to sit, or £25 to sit. What do we use? We have to eat. I hardly ever bought anything. It's fairly disgusting in days gone by. If you got a meat pie, it was full of jelly. And I seem to remember, I was too young, but they sold Higson's double top at the kiosks. There's probably more choice now, catering-wise. And of course, people do expect, if they pay a bit more, to get a better standard of catering. So whereas in the ground as a whole, it's averagely okay. You do get quite good quality if you pay an executive suite or if you pay in a lounge. So there's you pay more and you get more. But we're probably, in terms of comparing with other clubs in England and Europe, trailing a bit behind. because I don't think the match day experience is quite so luxurious at Goodison Park, not least because it's an old stadium.
Do you remember the Wrigley's man throwing the Wrigley's
just payments? About, yeah. Just about, yes.
Unerring aim.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
The sixpence used to hurl down from the crowd and he'd hurl back a packet of Wrigley's.
That's right.
I don't think that'd be allowed these days.
Health and safety, definitely not. Or the rattles or the crates, no.
And we touched on the ground changing. Obviously, there's been huge changes in the time that you've been going on.
Yeah.
Do you want to sort of highlight some of the changes that, from your perspective?
Well, although we've got a new stand at the Park End, well, relatively new, it's 14 years old. the ground is a fairly old ground, more than 100 years old in some cases. So it's in need of redevelopment, or we're in need of finding a new stadium. So whereas I love the ground to bits, I know that we can't stay there in its present form. I think we've been a bit unlucky in a couple of respects in a couple of previous ground moves having fallen through. I would have loved us to have played at the King's Dock. You know, just the actual the venue, the positioning, ideal on the banks of the Mersey. I was never a fan of Kirby. I didn't want to move there because I felt it was out of town and it was distanced. So that never attracted me. But I'm a romantic, and I'd love to see each stand developed into a more capacitous and a more luxurious stand on the present footprint. I don't know if that's realistic or not. One or two people claim to have made plans for it. I'd love them to be explored at the very least as an option, because Goodison Park is where the heart is. If we had to move, then I'd rather we moved closer to home, that, you know, maybe still close to the city centre. Dockland would be great, but I don't know. I would imagine that probably the best deal we'll get would be with a retail outlet. But if we move, it's got to be to a good ground. It's got to be special. It can't be any old stadium.
What's your recollections of when the Goodison Road was sort of halfy halfy, as they were?
Oh,
the
right,
new
it was.
Stand
it
was being it, built it was in sections.
Terracing below. Yeah, yeah, I never stood underneath that stand. I never stood in the old paddock as it was, although that was massive. You know, there must have been about 15,000-16,000 people able to fit under there at its peak. I remember the transition season when they built about one quarter of the new stand whilst retaining the old stand, and I was at the time, I was sitting in the old stand watching the new one go up.
Where did they start that from then?
They started that at the Gladys Street end, so that was completed, the first bit, probably by about December 1969, and then you had the rest of it just sort of lay dormant until I imagine April, May they began building the rest of it, and managed to finish it all by August. It was exciting. It was a three-tiered stand. I think it was fairly unique at the time. Obviously, it's showing its age now, but it was a magnificent stand.
Yeah, the million-pound stand, I think it was.
Was that right? Yeah.
In some of the newspapers.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of money in those days.
And was the people in that first third that was first built, because that was the championship winning year, of course.
It was, yes, yeah. So yeah, there were indeed people. I mean, I think the capacity was, before they started building, about 64,000, and it went down immediately to 58,000, and eventually to about 54,000 with the new stand in place. But yes, they were there.
Now he gets on to a... I think this is... I don't know if this is individual to football fans, but it's certainly something that a lot of people do. Match day rituals.
Match day rituals, yeah. Well, there's no particular clothing I wear. I tend to go to the same pub before the match. There's the Top House in Walton Village. That's only been a ritual for about the last 6 years, because before then I think I just go straight to the match. But now I meet up with friends. But in terms of other superstitions, there's no particular range of things I do. There's no particular clothing I wear. There's no particular mode of transport I would use above all. So basically, I'm not that superstitious. Although I am pessimistic by nature.
And the big one, Merseyside Derby. What does the Derby mean to you?
Well, it is the number one match. Mm. I always tend to have a feeling in the stomach of dread. Being a bit pessimistic, I fear the worst. I never go in with great optimism, so I always feel a little bit anxious before a derby. There's no doubt that for passionate it is the game. I prefer Goodison Derby to Anfield Derby because we stand more chance and because it's a bit less hostile. What is sad is probably the fact that they have become a bit more bitter over the past few years. You know, whereas there was once upon a time banter and loads of it, there wasn't the edge that you've got now among some people who look to cause trouble or to really stir things up, which is sad.
One that stands out in my mind is the Wembley League Cup final with that terrific chant of Merseyside.
And I know that was unique. I don't think that'll be repeated now. I think that was of its time. And that probably said more about Liverpool as Liverpool City politically, which felt a bit isolated in the 80s. So that was not only two clubs with people from the same families, but also two clubs from the same city sharing the same difficulties at that time. I just can't see it happening now. Although I used to be very proud of the fact that Merseyside Derby was the only derby where you could get fans sitting next to each other without there being an ounce of trouble. Nowadays, not so sure.
So away from Merseyside, what's the furthest match you've been to? You can't count Chile in that one.
Not count Chile, no. Well, I've seen relatively few games abroad. I did go to Alkmaar in the UEFA Cup and to Villarreal in the Champions League, but within this country, I think Southampton, that's probably the longest distance. Yeah. I have been way up to Middlesbrough and Newcastle and down to Southampton. I think I've been to every single ground in the current Premiership, not all this season, but in time. Probably worked out about 40 grounds I've seen, so another 40, another 50 to do.
Do you still go to many away matches?
I tend to go to about 3 or 4 a season, mainly North West ones, although if I'm in London, then I will make a point of going to see a London match. But,
it's not as easy these days. You used to be able just to pay on the gate, but...
I know, and it's all ticket these days. I think with very few having more than 3,000 allocations. So, if it's a popular game, then it's a bit more competitive.
And have you got a favourite out of the ones you've been to?
A favourite away ground. I think the one that's impressed me for its facilities is the Emirates. Went there a few seasons ago, and that's a luxury stadium. I like Villa Park because that's a good old football ground. So I always enjoy going there. And maybe I enjoy my visits to I've almost run out of ideas. As a London ground, I quite like Tottenham. I like White Hart Lane. I like it's kind of...
It's very similar to Goodison, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It is similar to Goodison. Yeah. And there's a good old atmosphere there, so I enjoy White Hart Lane,
Have you ever been to an international?
I haven't. Yes. And I've had the chance, because I know they've played in Goodison before now, but in a word, no. I wouldn't not want to. I'd be open to doing so, but...
It's very London-centric now, isn't it?
It is, and it was good when they had that business of having games around the country. It did give other fans, quite a chance to see, just to see without going to London.
Can you remember the 66 finals? Group matches being at Goodison?
I do, yes. My dad went. I didn't go, I was too young, but there was a lot of Portugal and North Korea, I remember. In fact, there was that great match between those two. Where I think North Korea were winning 3-0 at half time and Portugal won 5-3. And that was the best match my dad saw. And I remember watching the highlights on telly for that one. Yeah, I mean, I was starting to take a real interest, so I enjoyed watching the World Cup on telly in 66. And it whetted my appetite for the following season, no doubt about that.
How, this is a big question, the ground sharing, where would you sit on that?
I might accept it as a necessity. I might be persuaded to that view that it's a sensible, realistic thing to do, but it would be with a heavy heart. I mean, the heart still says no. I really want our own ground, our own identity, but maybe the head says it'll have to happen. So part of me's thinking, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that answer came out of you very, had to be dragged out. And overall, do you think football's too commercial now?
I do, yes. I think there's far too much money in football and it's not all trickling down. I mean, I don't see why players need to be paid £100,000, £200,000 a week. Yeah. That's a nonsense. I'd rather there was a cap. I mean, whether you could enforce it, I don't know, but yeah. I'd like to see it. And, I mean, I suppose you could argue that Sky's money has raised the game in our country. It's certainly made it a brand which is worldwide, worth watching. People get excited. It's not reduced the crowds who go. But, yeah, it still is a bit too commercial. I mean, when you're having to arrange matches for Thursday evenings and Sun, you know, when Sunday becomes the norm for a game. Again, I'm a traditionalist. I'd much prefer my Saturday 3 o'clock. That's when football takes place.
And would you mind if I just ask you a few questions about your involvement with the Everton Collection?
Certainly, yeah. Mm.
I know that's. I mean, you couldn't get much further away from commercialism than that, because that's a real love.
It is, yeah. It's an amazing collection, more than £1 million worth of memorabilia.
How did you get involved?
Well, I contacted Tony Tai, who was at the time organising the campaign for fundraising, saying I'd like to offer some help. And I know that as Ruleteros, we were interested in the history of the club and its tours, Latin American tours, etc. So I had that. I've always enjoyed the history, reading programmes, reading magazines, and basically studying stats. So it was natural that I'd want to be involved with this. And sure enough, Tony drafted me onto the committee, and the rest is history.
Because it really is a bunch of like-minded people, isn't it?
It is. People want to tell a story of football, because it is that, even more so than the story of one club. In fact, you could say it's a story of society and how that's changed. So what's important is that collection is able to be displayed for public viewing in as many places as possible, that as many people as possible get the chance to see the medals, the books, the contracts, the old shirts, and anything that conjures up memories.
So you'd like to see themed exhibitions going out
on
the road?
Yeah. Both educational and entertaining, yeah. I would do.
And this is an awkward one. Can you, an Everton fact that you think maybe other people haven't heard of? A little anecdote?
An Everton fact?
I'm sorry, I put you on the spot a bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's lots of curious facts about the old Everton team. I mean, did you know they used to play cricket in the summer? The early teams. That was all, obviously they wouldn't be paid for their football over the summer, so many played cricket is one thing. One fact I discovered when I took an interest in the collection is that for about 30 years, Everton and Liverpool shared a match day programme. There wasn't one at Goodison, one at Anfield. It was the same one for two games, one each club. Yeah. So that springs to mind. And I suppose there are people know these, but there are plenty of Everton firsts, like the first club to play in the floodlights and the first club to have a substitute and the first club to have goal nets, that kind of thing. I
dugouts,
kind of
I think,
thing.
Is one, isn't it?
Yes.
Dugouts,
yeah. Yeah.
So can you encapsulate what it means to be an Evertonian?
Well, yeah, it's important in my life and in my heart. Yeah. And I think I'm a better person for it, a more rounded person for it. It does affect me. It does affect my life. Yeah. But it's much more good than bad. Yeah. I've been Evertonian through thick and thin and plenty of thin, but the good stuff makes it all worthwhile. So I'm proud to be one.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Tony.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Get about half an hour there?
35 minutes, I think.